This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Hezbollah, the terror organization that is also an army with more than 150,000 rockets peppering the north of Israel every day during the Hamas conflict. 100,000 Israelis have been evacuated from the border because of the murderous intent of these missiles and anti-tank missiles. However, Hezbollah, long a threat throughout the world for its terror operators, and I welcome Emanuele Ottolenghi of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, writing most recently at International Institute for Counterterrorism about a Hezbollah plot in Brazil. Now, large parts of the Americas have been settled by Middle Eastern migrants. Syria, Turkey, Lebanon, all that over the course of the last 100 years or so. These communities are well-founded, well-financed, prosperous, and successful, as is the Americas in general, especially because they maintain relations through their religious centers with the old country, the way it works in America. Italians and Irish all coming to America and maintaining ties with the old country for several generations. Emanuele, a very good evening to you. We begin with the terror plot that was to eventuate into the murder of Jews. This was revealed late in 2023 during the conflict in Gaza, where Hezbollah had not advanced to attack the north of Israel, but it was expected momentarily. Instead, through their decision, they've kept up the peppering of missiles, but not crossed the line yet. However, in Brazil, it looks like Hezbollah was looking to make some statement of their reach to terrorize the Jewish citizens of Brazil, of the Americas, even of the United States. We know everybody's on alert, synagogues. So we come to a series of arrests that happened not in 2023, but in 2017. Arrests of a man named Kachmar, arrests of two Turkish citizens in Brazil, and the arrest of a man named Chamas. Who were they? What were they doing in 2017 that they were arrested, some of them in Paraguay? Good evening to you.
John, good evening. It's so good to be on your program. Thank you for having me. In between 2016 and 2017, authorities in the tri-border area of Argentina, Paraguay, and Brazil did a series of arrests, one essentially leading to the next. The first was Ali Chamas, a Lebanese businessman based in on the Paraguayan side of the tri-border, who was caught trying to ship 39 kilos of cocaine hidden in a commercial product that he was trying to dispatch to Turkey from Paraguay. The investigation into Chamas, when he was arrested, led to the discovery that he has a number of associates in the area. And eventually, in February 2017, two Turkish nationals were taken by authorities. And when they were taken, the authorities found that they had a lab where they were liquefying cocaine and putting it in shampoo bottles before they were being taken overseas by mules that would pack those bottles inside their suitcases. And eventually, once these two Turkish nationals were arrested, the authorities discovered more associates in the criminal undertakings of this group. So in April 2017, they went to arrest another one, a guy named Kachmar. The authorities stormed into his apartment and they found Kachmar with three other Lebanese nationals who were visiting, maybe friends, maybe doing business together. And since the authorities weren't quite sure who they were, they detained them as well. They seized their mobile phones and, of course, imaged the mobile phones just in case they would find incriminating evidence. But eventually, they couldn't find anything. They weren't even sure what they were looking for. And so while Kachmar was detained and charged, the other three were let loose. Now, why is this connected to the Hezbollah plot in Brasilia, the capital of Brazil, 6 years later? Because one of the three Lebanese nationals that were arrested or detained on that day with Kashmar turns out to be one of the two key figures in the Hezbollah plot. And so the arrest in 2017, you know, maybe missed the mark, because here was somebody clearly who wasn't there just for a social visit. He was part probably of a broad network engaged in criminal activities. And these networks that Hezbollah runs all over Latin America and West Africa as well are engaged in criminal activities, illicit finance, but they're also the people that Hezbollah leverages when he decides to organize a terror attack. And so that's why the story really begins back then. And because of those connections, we have an insight into who these people are and what their world is like.
If I read correctly, what is significant also here is that there's been evidence that Iran has recruited killers, that the Quds Force has recruited killers, but this is the first instance documented where Hezbollah recruited killers and didn't do it on their own. Did I read that correctly, Emanuele?
That is absolutely correct. You know, in the what stands out about the plot in Brasilia is what you just said. You know, in the past, Hezbollah would dispatch its own trained agents to locations around the world to carry out terror attacks. This time, it's two, you know, in points of contacts in Brazil were tasked with the recruitment of Brazilian nationals, preferably with criminal backgrounds and sort of a record of engaging in violent crime, to carry out the attacks. And so Diab, the one man who was arrested briefly in Paraguay in 2017 alongside Kashmar, and his associate, Mohamed Abdul Majid, these are the two main suspects in the current investigation, were in charge of recruiting Brazilian nationals. And as part of their recruitment efforts, they identified people and then offered them to fly to Lebanon. They flew them into Lebanon, and there's, you know, the investigation of the Brazilian police has the records of all their flights and how many times they traveled and who they met.
Right.
And once in Lebanon, they were offered the job of carrying out terror attacks, and then they came back to Brazil and started plotting.
All right. There's some pieces in between, however, because what your article identifies is how these networks work. It's not just cash and carry.
Yes.
This isn't the same as going into a Correct. Candy store and buying all the chocolate bars, because there is family, and I believe family is priority here. In fact, family is priority 1, 2, and 3. Diab and Abdul Majid, though they're from origins are separate, Syrian and Lebanese, they're family, they're related. And that leads them.
They are indeed.
Yep. That leads.
Yeah,
also,
the mother of.
That leads also
yeah,
to.
The mother of Abdul Majid.
That leads also to the family's religious worshiping practices, because what is striking about these, we would call them in crime thrillers, petty criminals, is that they have relations with sheikhs, with mosques, with religious societies, with people who swear allegiance to in some fashion a vision of the future, the Ummah. All of this is inconsistent with the cynical version of petty criminals, that they're in it for themselves and they don't have memories. These men seem characters that would not be would be too fantastic in a novel. And that's my impression of them, reading from your explication. They don't look guilty of murder. They look guilty of being sort of sneak thieves. Are they more than that, Emanuele?
They are indeed. Both of them are, you know, they hold radical views. They are supportive of Hezbollah and the Iranian regime. Mm. And while they may be engaged in petty crime or serious financial crimes, as it appears, certainly in the case of Diab, they're doing it, at least in part, to support an ideological religious cause, the one of Hezbollah in Iran. And what's remarkable about those two and their families is that not only are they involved in financial crime and then recruitment of hitmen to carry out terror attacks, but they were also very much close to the network of religious centers that Iran has established across Latin America to advance its radical message of Islamic revolution. So when you look at their connections and their activities, and in the case of Abdul Majid, he actually traveled back to Syria and enrolled in the Syrian army and fought for the Bashar al-Assad regime while he was away from the country for a year and a half. So we're talking about people who are very much devoted to a cause and put their business and their services to the benefit of that cause.
We need to introduce some more players here. When we come back, we're going to a religious center in Brazil that seems to be a nexus, like the Grand Central Station of drugs and murder. Emmanuel Ottolenghi for the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, a case study in terror, but at the same time, because of the Hamas war and the imminent or threatened Hezbollah war, this is modern warfare. This is a battle, existential battle for survival by Israel and its allies. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.